Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey. I'm pleased to be back with you again. Regular listeners will know that I wasn't able to be with you last week. I took my wife off on a long weekend break, and to be honest with you, it's the first one we've had for 7 years. And that comes about due to my wife's in health, and she has difficulty in travelling any length of time. I have to say, we had a very good time on coach and train, touring the Lake District in England, which, if any of you are familiar with it, is very beautiful, very picturesque. Now, because I've missed a week, I obviously have 2 weeks of Sheldon Nidal's messages, and as usual, I will start with those. I have a reasonable assortment of general news items, and a short UFO report of a UFO and contact sighting from my favourite old magazines, the Flying Saucer Reviewers. So without further ado, I'll start with the message from Sheldon Nidal, which was a week ago last Tuesday. Now what I've done with these two messages is edit them to some extent so that they don't take up too much time of the programme. But in usual events, I find it difficult to take anything out. However, I start with the one from Tuesday, May the 8th, and it reads that everywhere, your world is progressing towards the great transformation that we have been talking about. This need for change has created a massive interest among you in spiritual matters. These pursuits are just the beginning of a journey that all of you have in some way begun in earnest. This search for a new spiritual identity is moving Earth's peoples through huge upheavals, which are leading to a state of affairs where the spiritual revolution we have long described can actually become feasible. Presently, your world is going through a period of enormous distress. It is also the time when the dark's machinations are, at long last, to backfire on them, thus leaving an opening for the light. Grabbing the opportunity, our Earth allies can firmly challenge the Dark Ones head on and defeat them and their global minions. It reads on that the pressure upon Mother Earth, the dark and the light, to manifest a new reality is unrelenting. Thus, the immediate future is pregnant with the potential for the emergence of a series of critical events. Among these is the absolute requirement that the US regime be replaced. Another is the need to reform the current creaking global economic and banking system. Without these reforms, a great economic collapse with devastating consequences in financial, political and cultural arenas looms on your horizon. This catastrophe does not only concern the various institutions and hold together your global society. They also involve Mother Earth and your present spiritual and consciousness shift. To look at what is taking place on your planet and then to give mundane climate change reasons to explain away the immensity of what is happening is quite ludicrous. Your reality is transforming, and in doing so at a rate unheard of in recent natural history. Despite knowing about this, your political leaders have conspired to keep the lid on the momentous changes now afoot and their implications for each one of you and your global society. First contact with your planet has at times seemed an unlikely proposition, as the state of your world would not normally qualify you for such a transformative event. Nevertheless, having made it clear that this is an exceptional case and a wholly divine undertaking. You are now facing an event of great consequence, one that brings an end to your present realities and introduces you to great new challenges and responsibilities. Our experiences with your world have taught us that a simple uncloaking of our fleet, followed by an impromptu mass landing, would be most unwise. Thus began the first of many projects to educate ourselves about your unique cultures with the purpose of eventually being able to carry out our divine task. We detailed a large crew of volunteers from our fleet to gather information from many places around the globe over the past two decades. Their reports, together with those of our liaison and diplomatic corps, have given us a working template of the way your society operates and an idea of how to proceed to accomplish our mission. Our evolving cooperation with your enlightened groups has forged the present joint game plan that is now moving quite swiftly forward. We are in contact with many on your world who desire our free and open presence among you. They are at the core of what we are now engaged upon. As our various projects progress, we closely watch our allies work to remove, within the due process of law, the present US regime. This particular operation, because of the many legal requirements and nuances, as well as the perfidy of the current administration, is going slowly. Many plans have already been attempted but failed. The current strategy now underway is one the Earth allies have full confidence in, and they insist it is to yield the results we all seek. Meanwhile, the dangerous direction the world is headed in persists. Against this background, our Earth allies maintain their course and wait anxiously for what is shortly to transpire. And so, the grand push to remove the present US regime is indeed underway. As you can see, much is happening behind the scenes and in secret on your world. Concurrently, your continuing physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual transformation is getting to a point where the collective prerogatives of this reality force a new one to manifest. It is this certainty that also drives our efforts to carry out an open first contact with you. Heaven has forged a master plan, which is intended to reveal the divine plan. This divine plan decrees that you are destined to return to your natural state of full consciousness. The last part of this process involves not decades, but a much shorter time frame. And that is the end of last week's message from Sheldon Nidal, which of course is made on behalf of the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. To continue this week, it reads, a great deal of necessary movement in the international banking field has occurred, which promises that the deliveries are close to being manifested. Our representatives inform us that many important breakthroughs have been achieved very recently, which, coupled with what we are doing in Washington, D.C., to promote a swift and legal regime change, indicate that first contact will shortly return to its former fast-track status. To change the direction of an entire global society, and at the speed that is required, is a truly colossal undertaking. A huge number of people have to be primed, and many sound agendas ready to roll. And yet, these factors now stand ready. The training is being expedited by special technologies and aided by the large body of intelligence that we alluded to last week. This new data is demonstrating to our Earth allies just how sneaky and reprehensible this last dark cabal really is. Remember that this group controls most major players in your present reality. As the playwright for new global scenarios, the dark side has maintained an illusory stage production that has masqueraded successfully as events of substance. Our intelligence is able to blow the lid off this charade. Our allies were astonished by these discoveries and have proposed valuable people to be trained by us. As our joint projects move forward, it is critical that what is meant to occur in the next time frame comes off as planned. We are working on numerous items of interest to first contact, the most important of which is a suitable US regime change. The new transitional government most assuredly needs to be devoted to moving America back from the brink of some massive disasters, all of which have been carefully put in place by the last four administrations. The agendas they followed include forging a single North American Union under one government, weakening the US economy severely, outsourcing the key elements of the economy, and sabotaging the US dollar. On top of this is an accelerating drive to institute policies designed to remove the Constitution further and further from legitimacy and to substitute a plethora of statute-based legal codes. When we began diplomatic dealings with your top officials, we had to become conversant with these trends, so that we could work with our allies to create a template for returning the US regime to its constitutional roots. Today, this operation contains all the necessary steps for doing this. On a more general note, the endemic corruption and wholesale covert theft indulging by most governments around your world need to be turned around. Elections and appointments to government positions are supposed to be an immense privilege predicated on honour and merit. Instead, ruthlessness and self-interest seem to be the prime qualifications for high office in your world. And very few men and women of honour are to be found in positions of real influence. All too often, those who possess merely great economic and financial resources rule the roost. Another stipulation is the recharging of corporations into special limited public partnerships, as these entities have a wide social and ecological impact on their communities. These companies need to be geared towards responding both locally and globally to a variety of social and environmental moral imperatives. At the top of our agenda is the distribution of a massive prosperity drive. This project creates a truly global abundance as vast sums are funneled out to reach every person on this globe. With freedom comes responsibility, and one of the prime duties is for you all to become government watchdogs. This requires the use of the internet and other technologies that can unite you into large democratic interest groups. This body politic can also push for the end to the UFO cover-up. This world of prosperity is far different from the one you know now. To begin with, it is much more peaceful and cooperative. True harmony among nations can only happen when scarcity and need are not fomenting aggression born out of desperation. Also, the amount of sharing and cross-cultural acceptance will immensely increase. The world released from the need for conflict is ready to embrace its cultural and racial diversity. A form of technology at present suppressed is to become widely available to you. This device is designed to put you inside the head of the one you are speaking to. This interface unit instantaneously translates language and cultural nuances, making your words completely comprehensible to the other party and vice versa. Thus, conversation goes to a whole new level of exchange. Further, entire networks of speakers can be simultaneously interfaced with one another. As you can imagine, this can result in a huge surge of understanding and appreciation for each other and your many varied cultures as the linguistic barriers that divided you melt away. The event of our open arrival is a waypoint along the road that is making you into first a planetary human and ultimately a galactic one. Our project simply formed part of Heaven's greater momentum to achieve this divine goal. The present systems are breaking down as the last Dark Cabal and its adherents work feverishly to prevent the inevitable uplifting. Nevertheless, your divine future is unstoppable. Thus, your present world is meant to crumble and to do so in the very near future. Our part is to do what is necessary to see that this occurs as planned. Your part is to accept this, to remain positive, and to know that first contact draws closer. What we are doing is to design to make this possible. Our many fleets of observation scout craft work to prepare Mother Earth for the final grand event. Our senior staff is similarly preparing to deliver the broadcasts that mark the opening stages of actual contact. Our entire mission is focused on bringing our technology and our personnel to your shores as swiftly as possible. And that message concludes by saying that we have undertaken to assist our Earth allies in assuring the people of Earth that the necessary pre-contact changes come off as having so intense. Know that we're doing everything necessary to ensure your great victory. So once again, I think without a shadow of a doubt, very uplifting message, and it's very interesting to learn the details of some of the matters that have been planned and the way they're going to work out as part of the upliftment. Now I'll come to my general news items. I have quite a few of these, and as usual, anything to do with the war in the Middle East keeps cropping up, and clearly that won't go away until those issues are settled and we have peace. I have an interesting article here which was published on Saturday, May the 12th, by The Nation. An article called Outsourcing the War, written by Jeremy Scarhill. And of course I'm going to read you an extract of it. It's by Jeremy Scarhill, who I note is the best-selling author and investigative reporter for The Nation. And he testified on May the 10th before the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Defence on the impact of private military contractors on the conduct of the Iraq War. And this is part of his remarks. He's saying that I have submitted my full remarks and request they be entered into the record. I am an investigative reporter for The Nation magazine and the author of the book Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. I have spent the better part of the past 2.5 years researching private arms warfare. I have interviewed scores of sources, filed many Freedom of Information Act requests, obtained government contracts and private company documents of firms operating in Iraq, Afghanistan and elsewhere. Now, he's talking to the House Appropriations Committee on Defence, and he's saying, as the committee is well aware, we're now in the midst of the most privatised war in the history of our country. This is hardly a new phenomenon, but it is one that has greatly accelerated since the launch of the global war on terror and the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Many Americans are under the impression that the US currently has about 145,000 active duty troops on the ground in Iraq. What is seldom mentioned is the fact that there are at least 126,000 private personnel deployed alongside the official armed forces. These private forces effectively doubled the size of the occupation force, largely without the knowledge of the US taxpayers that foot the bill. But despite the similarity in size of these respective forces in Iraq, there are key differences with the way our government approaches the active duty military and these private war contractors. For instance, we know that nearly 3,400 US soldiers have been killed in Iraq and more than 25,000 wounded. We do not know the exact number of private contractors killed or wounded. Through the US Department of Labor, we have been able to determine that at least 770 contractors had been killed in Iraq as of December 2006, with at least 7,700 wounded. These casualties are not included in the official death count and help to mask the human costs of the war. More disturbing is what this means for our democracy, at a time when the administration seems unwilling to subject its war strategy to oversight by the Congress. We face the widespread use of private forces seemingly accountable to no effective system of oversight or law. While tens of thousands of these contractors provide logistical support, thousands are heavily armed private soldiers roaming Iraq. So that's interesting. I wonder if that information will spread. I guess for certain you won't see much in the main media about it. So we have to thank the internet for this news coming to light. Now here's another article about the Middle East. This was posted by someone who goes under the name of Lady Hawk. It's a report from Michael St. Clair. Can't actually discover on this email what he's connected to, whether he's representing one of the main newspapers or whatever. Anyway, I will read the report. And it's with reference to the soldiers in Iraq being censored as far as using the internet. The report reads, the situation both in Iraq and in Afghanistan is a lot more involved than mainstream media can fathom. And if it could fathom what is going on, it would not be allowed to report it for obvious reasons, as this would further undermine the morale of the Western world. Troops and their families at home used to be able to at least write emails to each other via blog spots, and troops were also allowed to access certain parts of the internet. This is now no longer possible. The truth here is multi-layered. Several troop elements, including high-ranking officers, have started to refuse to carry out certain missions because simply these missions are so dangerous that the loss of more troops would be the consequence. There are not enough protective elements to back up guards on forlorn outposts, and there are in general not enough troops to hold down the territories of Iraq and Afghanistan. This assessment was clear to this author going in during 2003. Sources of this author who are on the ground in the Middle East, either embedded with media or with troops, or with the State Department security forces as private contractors, have seen that even holding order in the streets of Baghdad or Kabul is not possible, let alone holding the ambitious land grab that ranges in essence from Afghan mountain passes over Iran to Basra and the Kurds territories. It is strategically not doable, and this has been pointed out by a plethora of highest-ranking general officers. The Pentagon seems not to hear what the intelligence on the ground is saying, or it seems not to care what is happening to the troops which are extended beyond their capacities. People who were promised to return home after 12 months were told at the last moment that their tours were to be extended by up to 3 to 4 months, which for both officers and soldiers can take a huge physical and mental toll. This results then in fatigued and frustrating troops who see that what they are doing is pointless at best, or dangerous or worse. Levels of concentration are no longer there when sleep is deprived, logistics do not work, and command unity is not established. Troops have begun to complain to their families and started to tell their loved ones while at home what is really going on. Apparently you can pick some of that up on the website myspace.com. And it reads, and many other hubs of the World Wide Web were used by families who created networks of their own, and they write about their loved ones staying in the occupied lands and what they tell them. Independent observers at UN and in diplomatic circles confirm this. The situation in Iraq and Afghanistan is slowly but surely falling apart for the troop elements as well as the occupied countries. History would show that after a while, the occupied territories of the Roman Empire knew how to answer to the occupation. They just waited. At times, they waited hundreds of years. In this day and age, and in the face of militia-type defense, that is day-by-day learning how to defend its lands in a bigger and better organization. The waiting can be as short as 10 years. So far, we are in this situation since 2003, a bit over 4 years. Well, there I leave that report, because I think sufficient is said there for one to get the point here. And I'm sure that cutting off the troops from a good range of news about what is taking place both abroad and at home must add to their rather low morale. Move on now to the probably the most sensational subject of recent months, and that is the one regarding the Wanta case, the Wanta settlement payment. It goes on and on, and of course it's covered fully by a very excellent website called globeanalysis.net. And we have here reference to a letter that was sent to Vice President Cheney demanding Wanta settlement payment. Now, it was sent by Michael C. Cottrell, MS, the Executive Vice President of Ambassador Leo Wanta's Ameritrust Group, and it was sent to Vice President Richard B. Cheney. It shows how the United States, act of economic war, against the United Kingdom, the Bank of England, is associated not only with the geopolitical engineering identified in our last two postings, but also with the clumsy attempt by Vice President Cheney to mask the fact that the diverted and exploited $4.5 trillion Wanta settlement funds have been unlawfully kept off the books. While the US Treasury Secretary, Henry M. Paulson, at Cheney's direction, diverted $4.8 trillion from the Bank of England on the 29th to the 30th of March 2007 in an attempt to place these funds on the books before authorising the release of the $4.5 trillion to the lawful Ameritrust Group, Inc. securities account at the Morgan Stanley Company, Inc. coordinates. Additionally, a refunding in the form of a new issue and subordinated debt obligations will be used to recover the misappropriated Bank of England monies in a further despicable operation designed to delay the authorised release or to prevent the payment of the Wanta settlement funds, thereby also legally preventing Ambassador Leo Wanta's corporation from remitting $1.575 trillion to the US Treasury in fulfilment of his legal obligations and in furtherance of the interests of the United States and its people. We have no doubt at all that those concerned and all who are monitoring this crisis around the world understand the precise significance of the foregoing and of what follows. It reads that this letter should be read in context, in particular, of our two previous postings. They were dated the 1st and 4th of May. In the meantime, multiple attempts are being made by the US centrally directed conspirators to obstruct the course of justice by the means of foul, dirty tricks which shall be exposed in due course. Their hopeless objective is to bury the worst financial corruption crisis in world history, and their theft of trillions of dollars, which they have covered up and had they paid the $4.5 trillion compromise Wanta settlement this time last year, which they could have covered up, etc. And they're saying, as a final comment, in this desperate, cynical endeavour, they are conspicuously failing. So there we are, that's an update on the Wanta settlement payment. There's an article that's come around, I say again, because the building of the US Embassy in Iraq is not something new, but information about the size of it, etc., maybe. I have a very short extract here. It comes from the site tvnewslies.org, and it's saying that 27 buildings on 104 acres is not an embassy, it's an occupation. 104 acres does not make an embassy, it makes a city, a base, occupied territory, but most of all, in this case, 104 acres serves as proof of another lie of George W. Bush and another lie to the American people by the media. We are not leaving Iraq, no way, no how, even though George W. Bush says otherwise. There we are. If you want to know more, you can go to the website tvnewslies.org. I think I read quite some time ago that the whole intention of invading Iraq was to set up a base there and stay permanently in that area, because the agenda of the Illuminati, which is one of global domination, requires that they take over the oil deposits in the Middle East. So that's the end of that short report. Have another one, and most of these come to me via the email, by the way, which is why I can't always tell you all the ins and outs of where they come from. And this is, in fact, the case here. It's referring to the CBS, who fired consultant General Batista over the vote. Let's add, saying, we went to war with a fatally flawed strategy. And retired Army Major General John Batista has been asked to leave his position as a consultant to CBS News over a new advertisement criticising the Iraq war. The ad was produced by the group Vote Vets. And if my understanding is correct, that means they are the vets from the earlier wars out in the Far East. Can't see anything else on this short note I've got that would give us any more information, but there you are. It just shows you that you're not allowed to talk in any way that criticises what is going on under the Bush administration. That is at your peril if you do. Now, Ron Paul has sparked off a lot of interest, and he's getting a lot of support. And apparently he won the second GOP debate. And this is a short article by Michael Hampton. Again, unfortunately, I don't know where he hails from or who he works for. But it was a short report posted on May the 16th. And it reads, for those who doubted that Rep. Ron Paul was a serious contender for the Republican presidential nomination in 2008, the debate Tuesday night in South Carolina put all doubts to rest. Paul stirred up a firestorm of controversy for suggesting that the Department of Homeland Security made national security even more inefficient after September 11 than before, and especially for his assertion that U.S. foreign policy over the past several decades contributed to the rise of Islamic terrorism. But viewers at home responded, putting Ron Paul in second place in Fox's own tamper-proof viewer poll, as opposed to the largely conservative Fox viewers, MSNBC's interactive and post-debate poll, with more moderate viewers, puts Ron Paul squarely at the top of the heap among that network's viewers, and so ends that little report. I think I totally agree with Ron Paul's views there, as expressed in that short sample. And I think along with people like Dennis Kucinich, we're seeing perhaps the representatives who are going to figure very prominently in the new government once first contact has taken place. These people must be merged now, otherwise we won't get to know them and we won't have any idea what their beliefs or policies would be. Now I move on to one subject about a US oil company accused of dumping waste in the Amazon, which is in fact one I've read about over the month, so this evidently is not new, but it's the ongoing story. This was written by Andrew Gumbel of the Independent UK via a website called commondreams.com. I gather there's also another site that carries some of this news, and it's called oneplace.com. So you can take your pick there. It reads that a US oil company has been accused of contaminating an area of the Peruvian Amazon where it and its successor company have drilled for oil for the past 32 years, creating misery for the local Achura people and widespread lead and cadmium poisoning. A report issued by a coalition of protest groups, including Amazon Watch and Earth Rights International, on May 3rd, 2007, accused the company, Occidental Petroleum, of violating Peruvian and international law by dumping an estimated 9 billion barrels of toxic waste in the area since it started prospecting in the early 1970s. The produced waters, as the waste is technically known, were allegedly dumped directly into rivers and streams used by the Acura for drinking, bathing, washing and fishing. Medical research documented in the report showed dangerously elevated levels of lead and cadmium in the Acura population. Now just bear with me a few seconds while I have a sip of water. Right, I'm back. That's better. I could feel my throat drying up a little bit then. Passing on to yet another item of general news, this is one which is on a more happier note, about the conference in Hawaii, which is held in Kona, and it's the EXO Politics Institute. This was May the 15th, and this conference was held on Hawaii's Big Island, featuring 14 international experts, and they have approved by consensus a declaration for launching an Earth Transformation Movement. Titled the Earth Transformation Declaration, it comprises principles intending to transform the Earth in a sustainable, peaceful and life-affirming manner by adopting a range of environmental, scientific, spiritual and political principles and practices. Using a consensual decision making process adopted by speakers and attendees, the conference revised and approved by consensus 20 Earth Transformation Principles submitted by the Hawaii-based Exapila Politics Institute. The introduction to the declaration highlights celebrating the global spiritual awakening that is promoting health, acceptance and harmony, recognizing new scientific principles and the existence of new technologies, and acknowledging the evidence that extraterrestrial life is observing, visiting, and residing on Earth. Among the 20 principles included was a recognition that transformation begins with the wholeness created by right relationships with oneself. That extends to other persons, other cultures, other life, our planet, and the larger whole of which we are all a part. Another principle affirms the potential of new energy technologies to provide solutions to urgent global environmental and resource depletion issues. The declaration also calls for transparency and accountability in governance, inclusive participation in decision-making, respect for human rights, public oversight of all government-funded projects involving extraterrestrial life and technology. And if you want to read what those Earth Transforming Declarations are, you can go to earthtransformation.com. I think that's nice. I can see there are many, many groups all over the world that are picking up on what is needed. And what they're doing, in my opinion, is laying down the basis for many movements that will develop very rapidly with the coming First Contact. It's interesting that the line these people have approached is one that I remember was a feature in the book You Are Becoming a Galactic Human, which was written by Virginia S. Seen with Sheldon Idle. And some of the points made there were almost word for word exactly what the Syrians told us we needed to do and what our responsibilities would be. Basically, it all boils down to guardianship, where people, the planet, and maybe the solar system are concerned. We have to accept our responsibilities. Well, I'm getting nearly to the end of my news items. There's a short one here, which came from Andrew Bridges, who's an Associated Press writer, came on May the 7th through Washington, and it's just a short one here saying, in a triumph for the pharmaceutical industry, the Senate on drive to allow consumers to buy. Sorry, I've got a little bit missing on this email. Basically boils down to that the Senate voted on allowing the pharmaceutical companies to drive customers away from drugs that they can buy abroad at a significantly cheaper price than domestic prices. They did this by requiring the admin to certify the safety and effectiveness of imported drugs, which apparently officials cannot meet. So they are preventing people from buying their drugs from cheaper sources abroad. That's what it basically comes down to. It was a narrow vote, apparently on a 49-40 vote, where this protection of the pharmaceutical industry was passed. Sad, really. But there we are. That is what has happened. Right, and the final item of general news comes back to one of the failures, I suppose. There's not a week goes by that something doesn't come up about impeachment. Now, the fact that Speaker Pelosi is taking a tally for impeachment is not new news, because that came up a fortnight ago when I did my last program. But I only mention this one because it's a site who is calling for people to call Nancy Pelosi's office, and they want people to commit themselves right now, and then in turn to ask at least 10 others, then ask those to call, to get another 10 others to call, and so on. And they're saying, let's deluge the Speaker's office with demands for impeachment of Bush and Cheney. Apparently, Congressman Kucinich has recently introduced legislation to impeach Dick Cheney. Strange that, actually, because I read at one time he withdrew from it. But there we are. It still seems to be current. That's all I wanted to read off that one. Right. I can now come to a very short article from an old flying source review, which I have quite a number, going back to the 60s. This one came out in September, October 1969. It basically comes down to a sighting in May 1957. Lady and Mrs. Francis Dickler, who was 62 years old and lives in Pennsylvania, 6 o'clock in the morning, and she was about to apparently enter her barn to feed the chickens, and she heard a soft whirring or spinning sound, which caused her to hesitate and look upward, and she saw a rather flat, bowler-shaped object with a broad rim, and it soared into view over the barn, only about 15 feet above the roof. About 50 foot away, about 35 foot from the ground, the saucer came to a stop in a somewhat tilted position and remained poised for nearly a minute. Then spinning around, it sailed in a large, nearly horizontal arc to the southeast and disappeared over the wooded hill. Now, the article reads that the detailed observations which Miss Stickler made of the object are fascinating. She saw a man in a light grey, tight-fitting helmet and a loose-fitting, shiny suit of the same colour sitting on the broad rim of the saucer with his feet and legs in the lower portion of the saucer. And she said the man sat on the rim on the far side of the saucer, facing directly towards her. And the saucer being tilted, she could see his body and down to his knees. She couldn't make out any real details much below his waist because of the lack of good light and the angle of the saucer. She said the man of average size had deep-set eyes and a rather long face with a calm to quizzical expression. His skin was suntanned, and Miss Stickler reported that the man may have been wondering what she was thinking about and if she would scream or run. She said at no time did she think of speaking to the occupant of the saucer. The two looked at each other for the entire time. Miss Stickler was at first too surprised to be uneasy. Then as the man continued to gaze at her, she began to feel disturbed and wondered what his next move might be. And what should you do? About that time, the whirring sound began to increase, and the saucer took off. When she was interviewed later, she said that the saucer with the flange was estimated to be about 20 feet in total diameter, with the flange 3 to 4 foot wide. No bubble cover over the top of the shiny aluminium-coloured saucer was visible. And she said as the saucer disappeared, the bottom came into view and gave the impression of being a shallow hemisphere. The impression also of something spinning was again evident, although nothing was observed to be spinning, nor were there any noticeable air currents which disturbed the ground cover. The spinning or vibrating sound which the saucer emitted made me particularly feel that it was mechanically operated. Because of the relatively small size of the device, it was felt that the saucer was based nearby. Now, later on, she added some additional points, saying that the UFO seemed to be aluminium. Over the top of it, it had a clear plastic cover. It was circular, no blades. It stood there without noise, and she said, I don't know what made it go. And she estimated the time of her observation was 3 to 4 minutes. She said the occupant looked like a slim 18-year-old boy and had a uniform like a mechanic wears, helmet over the head to protect him, no goggles, face open, no hair showing. And she said the face looked like a normal person, white, eyes and eyebrows, and hands like anybody else's, had gloves on, but she couldn't see any buttons, seams or zippers. And she said he was as surprised as I was. We looked at each other for a few minutes and I wasn't frightened. He just stood there and then I got frightened. And apparently there was no discernible effects on the chickens or the birds. She said, talking to the saucer, it had no steering wheel, as in an auto, but had things where you could pull levers. The thing seemed to die down, talking of the vibrations. She said you didn't hear any engine, it was standing still. And he, the occupant, wasn't doing anything while he was looking at me. He started off and went at right angles to where he had come from before. It seemed to be like a puff of steam out of the back as it flew off. And it went faster and faster and seemed to get louder and louder as it went ahead. At a distance, all you noticed was the plastic covering. I had looked for that, but didn't see anything like that, talking of whether there was any identification. So that was it, really. That's the full information from that particular report. I suppose nothing terribly unusual, except that it must be a little unique in the sense that she saw the occupant so closely and he was sitting on the edge of the saucer in that way. I suspect he was probably able to telepathically keep her calm and also knew what she was thinking. And maybe at the time when she thought she might scream, they obviously considered it time to leave. Now, I've got about 7 or 8 minutes here to finish up the programme because they like me to finish 5 minutes to the hour. So what I'm going back to here is a message that came through on behalf of Samantha. Can't actually make out where it's come from, but it goes back to Tuesday, May the 1st. So again, this is the problem with some of these items I run off the emails. And Samantha was saying that he had come with the spiritual hierarchy, bringing the divine and violet flame transmutation to all. And he said it is especially noteworthy to mention that those of you who are utilizing the violet fire at this point in your cosmic evolution will be yielding vast and rapid results. The violet fire is a gift given to those with spiritual responsibility and divine refinement to use for the highest good of all. It is a gift of the seventh way, especially prevalent in the seventh year of purification. Used for the purposes of clearing the way of illusion, to set the path of truth, sovereignty, justice, and freedom. And he says, beloved ones, the fire of alchemic transmutation is a divine credence unlike any other. It is a powerful form of clarifying intention and basing that intention in the highest altar of creation. We remind you of its power merely to inspire you to use this gift in these turbulent days of energetic discord element by which the fire is created from and based upon has more to do with the powerful tie of transformation that your world is undergoing at present. This element was specifically designed for the ability to lift and transmute lower vibrational frequencies to the fullest expression of light. This is undoubtedly necessary in the times you find yourself in, for the power to lift yourself out of density is now a daily dedication to strive for. The lifting is a part of the responsibility of a light worker, for it is in your conscious power to see and realize truth above all else. We call to you now to remember this power each time you are compelled to entertain thoughts of fear. The collective consciousness of humanity is in its peril, releasing many past wounds of ancient days of destruction. These feelings stem from old energies that are now being triggered, purified and released as you prepare on an unconscious and conscious level for the upliftment of humanity. Your awareness is what will keep you grounded when all else in the world seems at odds. Detach from these thoughts and feelings as they pulse through you. Observe them with conscious awareness and call to the violet flame to transmute them and set them free. These past wounds are so deeply embedded within the collective psyche that it is a common misperception among many that you are headed for doom. This is clearly not so, for the collective power of light workers are star seeds and new generations of crystal children are here specifically to anchor the grids of a new future based in love. These selfless souls are among you now, specifically to thwart any danger of cataclysmic catastrophe for the purposes of a much needed evolutionary and quantum shift. To this end, you shall see this through, and it will be from the light of those souls who hold this constant vision to take this reality and firmly anchor it in place. The perspective of truth is all that is required of those awakened souls to anchor this reality. Your focus on the highest possible outcome is what will make it so. Focusing on possibilities fraught with fear will only draw to you energetic and emotional reinforcement for the decisions, and rapidly now. Expecting struggle will surely manifest it, just as expecting ease will come rushing to meet you. Lift your visions, brothers and sisters, for you are creating at great speed, and what you think and feel will come rushing to meet you in the new magnetic existence. There are many possible outcomes in the realms of the unlimited. The purpose of being a conscious co-creator is therefore to choose and align with the highest. What purpose does it serve to align with an outcome that is less than your desires? We say that there is no purpose to such a focus, as your collective energy is so powerful now that you can undoubtedly create the miracles of your highest choosing. We say choose so you realize on deep levels that the power of your creations always remains in your choice. Finally, stay aligned with what you choose and see it through to its end. For this is the united network of exalted beings with a vision upheld in clarity and saturated with light. When a thought of lower form comes to the fore and carries with it the attachments of fear, bathe it in the violet fire, release it to the kingdom of heaven, and refocus yourself on the truth that sits peacefully in the deepest recesses of your heart. That isn't the full message as it happens, but it is the most, I think, interesting part, and there is some very sound advice. I know a number of people use the violet flame or the violet ray, and of course it's associated very much so with Saint Germain. I've got a few seconds left, so I will say thank you very much for being with me. I hope you enjoyed the articles that I have selected, and perhaps next week, when I should be with you again, I will be able to get a little bit more into some of the messages that I have. So I think it's very important to try and include some on each one of the program. So thank you very much for being with me. God bless you all. Hope you're with me.